Welcome to the discussion, The Modernized Warehouse, sponsored by Zebra Technologies on Federal News Network.
Hello and welcome to today's program. I'm Eric White. Operating throughout the world, the Navy has an extensive supply and logistics system for support. To learn how it continuously upgrades and modernizes it, Federal News Network's Tom Temin spoke to two people from the Naval Supply Systems Command, Division Director John Ballou and Deputy Division Director Jason Harnish.
Our main job is an enabler, just like you said. We move around all kinds of pieces and parts in a complex supply chain. So what we're delivering is material, services, quality of life enhancements for the warfighters, like you said, so that ultimately they can go out and win that battle and endure a long fight so that we can achieve the ends that we're looking for. It's important to note, you know, one of the things that we do as far as making sure our mindset is in place, you know, the continual self-assessment, correction, all this kind of good stuff, so that we can leverage our relationships and finally, you know, achieve just continuous improvement, for lack of a better term. And I think it's something to mention is that we have three main business lines. One is weapon system support. Another is global logistics, husbanding services, sailor and family support. Weapon systems, think the acquisition, the material control, the Navy Working Capital Fund, material management, transportation of things. The global services and husbanding, or global logistics and husbanding services, think contracting services, hazardous material management, sailor and family support, think household goods services, postal services, Navy cash, and food service. So that kind of bucketizes what that we do and where we're doing it. We're global. We have 8 major centers all over the earth. We call those our fleet logistics centers, and they're co-located in our fleet concentrated environments like Pearl Harbor, San Diego, Puget Sound, Norfolk, Bahrain, Sigonella, Yokosuka, Jacksonville. And our headquarters is here in Mechanicsburg.
By the way, I've always wondered why Mechanicsburg, which is nowhere near the ocean, is the headquarters.
Yeah, I wondered the exact same thing. And many moons ago, I was in a DAU class, and what the gentleman specifically said was, if you were to look at the population of the United States, and you were to look at where it was most predominantly concentrated, if you were to put your finger on Mechanicsburg, and in this area, you can reach well over half of the overall population in our country within 6 to 8 hours. So it makes sense from a logistics standpoint, if we're servicing, you know, more than just us, this is good, because there's, you know, Amazon is here local. We have Walmart, huge Walmart distribution centers and so on, and lots of logistics headquarters are here as well. So that was his answer for that very question that I asked him.
All right. Well, you've solved a mystery. Maybe they should call it Logisticsville instead of Mechanicsville at some point. And within the 8 facilities that you mentioned around the world, just give us a picture of what they consist of, what they look like. Would they, for example, look like the type of warehouse where you would see lifts and dollies running around, picking things and putting them in, staging them to be shipped?
So our FLCs are aligned to the numbered fleets. And so what they do there is they provide the products and services to the customers. Now, outside of those, there are warehousing. And we had mentioned earlier talking about just the overall Department of Defense logistics footprint kind of thing. I believe I read an article that had a note in there that there's over 4,000 warehouses worldwide that is under the Department of Defense in some way, shape, form, or fashion. It's important to note for us in NAVSUP terms, we only deal with Navy Working Capital Fund material. So, and inside of that, that is primarily repair parts. So if you think about a car, your whole vehicle is a complete system, and all the piece parts that go into it are specifically what we are managing. So let's take that a step back and put our systems are like the Navy aircraft, surface ships, submarines, and all of their associated weapon systems and systems on board those ships. We're managing the piece parts for all of those that are unique to the Navy, hence the Navy Working Capital Fund. There are other components that go in there that are more of a consumable in nature. And so the ones that can go into multiple different systems are managed by DLA. So they have a larger, you know, standpoint in that they have more of the widgets and whammerdines, such as, you know, screws and gaskets and these kinds of things that can go into a tank and a helicopter and so on. We have the stuff that is very unique to our weapon systems, so not common across things.
So right, so a hinge there for an aileron or something, which would be unique to the Navy. Got it.
Right. It'd be different for an F-18, which is one of our weapon systems, than an F-22, which would be an Air Force system.
Right. You don't get that hinge off a blister package at the hardware store, I suppose.
No, sir.
And so that represents probably a lot of individual pieces and part numbers. Do you have any estimate?
The last estimate that I had was a little over 430,000 different unique Class 9 repair part line items for supply, which we manage. So if you want a better picture inside of that, we had a monthly inventory numbers come out a couple of months ago that showed we had around $45 billion worth of inventory. So, but you also have to keep in mind that some of these items are quite costly in nature, because some of them have to go inside of a submarine. And so it just can't be, like you had mentioned, the hardware store gasket that you pick up. It needs to be tested so that it's safe, and we know it will not impact the system and make sure that the submarine is safe.
And that part could be something like a whole engine too, fair to say?
It is, yes.
All right. Well, let's get a sense of the ways that you track them and know what you have and where it is. What's your methodology for if a requisition comes in for that hinge, for that aileron, to use that example? How do you know where it is and what you've got for inventory?
I'll pass that to John. He's the systems guy. But I will preface by saying we do have one tool specifically. If I were on the deck plate and I'm looking for a piece part and I don't have it, I would go into what's called OneTouch and look in there and see where it is in the world, because you can put in the stock number. The SKU is what normal or outside of the military stock keeping unit would be, what we refer to as a NIN. National identification number. So I would plug in the NIN in OneTouch, and then there's a tab in there that says inventory, and it would let me know where it is potentially in the world at a given time. So within a few hours of replication of data and all that stuff, so I would say probably a day or two old would be a good estimate of how old that data could be. But over to John to talk more about it. If you have anything else, John, go ahead.
All right, thanks, sir. So Navy ERP, right, is our accountable property system of record. So whether you're ashore or afloat, right, we really want Navy ERP to be that one-stop APSR for most of our folks receiving material. You know, other systems such as OneTouch Support, now Comus, or R Supply, right, or some of the other systems out there used on the supply side of the house. But for our shore facilities, right, Navy ERP, and ensuring that we have a accurate count within Navy ERP is critical to our success.
So the part could be several time zones away, but you'll know instantly exactly where it is.
Yes, sir.
And how are parts stored? Do you use barcodes? Do you use RFID? What's the system for keeping things in order and being able to retrieve them and account for them as they do move around?
So our team right now is looking at a variety of technologies. We are working on a system called NADACS, or Naval Autonomous Data Collection System, that was developed utilizing a next generation RFID, or radio frequency identification, that uses the MIST protocol and forms a mesh network. That is a battery-powered device that gives you real-time location. We're also integrating passive RFID, right? So not a battery-powered device. It's energized by the RFID reader, and then that bounces a signal back. NADAX is currently being developed to incorporate a more robust passive RFID capability. We have a pilot that was just started this year down at FLC Jacksonville looking to incorporate also the Marine Corps solution, which is MCPIC. That,
of course.
So, and for those that don't know, right, MCPIC is the Marine Corps Platform Integration Center. It's gotten some notoriety recently with the Marine Corps passing audit and being able to, with that clean audit opinion, they've credited MCPIC with really being able to enhance that. So we're looking to take the goodness there with the MCPIC team and integrate it into NADAX as another means of data ingestion. And like I said, FLC Jacksonville is our pilot site at this time, and we're hoping to learn from there and see how we can better incorporate passive RFID into our warehouses potentially moving forward.
Division Director John Ballou, and you also heard from Deputy Division Director Jason Harnish, both of the Naval Supply Systems Command, and speaking with Federal News Network's Tom Temin. We'll return with more of this interview after a short break. I'm Eric White.
For far too long, government warehouse and distribution centers have been working with aging infrastructure and obsolete technology. This creates cybersecurity risks and inefficient operations. Civilian and defense agencies trust Zebra Technologies to help them modernize with the broadest range of DoD-approved, STIG-validated rugged devices available with multiple cybersecurity certifications. Your operations can safely document administrative tasks with fewer paper processes, see inventory orders and assets in real time, and secure your workflows. Visit Zebra.com to learn how.
Welcome back to our interview with Deputy Division Director Jason Harnish and Division Director John Ballou of the Naval Supply Systems Command. Federal News Network's Tom Temin spoke to them about logistics and modernization of the warehousing and distribution functions.
And the sources of parts, that is something that varies, I presume. For example, how much comes from the original platform manufacturers, the contractors of this or that platform, say, and how much comes from the organic industrial base?
So as far as an exact percentage, I don't have that number on my tip of my fingers here. But what I can say is that it is codified in law that it needs to be greater than 50% has to come from the organic side of the house versus only commercial. So we have to retain a certain percentage of that. What our actual percentage is would vary greatly depending on the weapons system and what they consider as those critical parts that we need to make sure and retain those organic capabilities on. Does that help answer?
Yes, it does. And do you require both sides then to make sure that they conform to the systems you need for tracking and placing for eventual pulling and shipping? They both use the same sort of system to mark and numbering system and all of that.
When we go through an acquisition process, one of the things that we're talking about are all the piece parts that go into that. Inside of that, there are rules and regulations of how things are supposed to be numbered and what specific information needs to be on that, either a data plate physically on the actual machine or a piece part correction. So yes, it's very specific about what is required on those piece parts so that it is the same across the enterprise, no matter where the part comes from. And when it goes to the person at the pointy end of the spear and they need to have that part to get a weapon system back up and running, they don't have to go, oh, well, I don't have all the information that I need to know what this part is. That's taken out and we have a standardized approach for that. So yes. Mm-hmm.
And again, just a curiosity detail question. You mentioned machine, but meant to say part. Could what you supply be both? That is, I'll make an example. Ships have lots of winches on board, but a winch, you know, has a lot of parts. So it could be that they would requisition, we need a new pawl to stop the winch from going the other way when we lock it, versus we need a new winch?
Yes, sir. And we call those assemblies. So there's sub-assemblies and then there's overall assemblies. So yes, there's a greater whole, you know, the next higher assembly is what we would call it. Or it could be just a circuit card.
Sure.
So a single circuit card, or you could be looking for an anode that goes on said circuit card, or it could be the radar that the circuit card goes in. So it definitely, there's layers of what piece parts we do supply. Yes, sir. And there's NINs for each.
Sure. And some of the more sophisticated modern systems, especially those that fly, you know, diagnose themselves. They have maintenance and logistics kind of onboard systems that do predictive analysis. Does any of that tie in to your systems for, say, predicting future demand of this or that part?
As far as the predictive nature of those particular systems, I do not know definitively how well they're doing and, you know, forecasting those demands out. I know we have an allowancing team that does a fantastic job of going through and analyzing and forecasting and taking in a bunch of additional data to include what is actually happening in the fleet with the actual equipment. So I say all of that. The only system that I know that for the Navy that I've been involved with is ALIS and the F-35. Now, I didn't specifically run that portion of my warehouse, but yes, it was pretty awesome to hear the capability of that, where it could say, oh, I'm having this fault. I'm gonna radio ahead, if you will, to my logistics support staff and let them know that I'm going to need this widget or Whammerdyne replaced either soon or immediately upon, you know, me getting back on the ground. So how all that data would flow in to any of our systems, I'm not certain on that. But I know that we can certainly understand the mean time between failure so that we can at least look at it from that perspective and throw that into our calculus as to what we're going to put on the shelf and where based on, you know, the overall runtime of that weapon system.
Right. That gets to my next question, really, is how do you have a rough idea or maybe a fine-grained idea of what you do need to stock such that you don't have to always be reacting to requisitions to obtain the part, but you can fulfill it when the requisition comes because you've already got it? I mean, how do you know those levels that are proper, consistent with not having billions of dollars of inventory that nobody needs?
Right. It's basically can be summarized in it's a very data-centric decision-making model. And sometimes it could be, well, there's a readiness-based sparing model. And then I'll preface it this way. There's multiple models in which we can drive to the ends, and it really does focus on what is the weapon system for and how much of it and what is the operational availability need to be for that system. And then you take so many other factors. I think it's really beyond what I was intending to walk through. So I'd actually have to go back and look at some of our allowancing models. Sorry.
Well, that's okay. It's enough to know that you have allowancing models and that this is something that you pursue. And let's get back to maybe some basics here. A requisition comes in for an assembly or for a part or for that anode or that diode or that hinge. What happens? Walk us through the process of what happens when the requisition comes in and when that thing eventually leaves and how it leaves and gets to its destination.
So Let's give an example. I came from Lemoore, Naval Air Station Lemoore, and I ran the warehouse there before coming here. So we would have the flight line would recognize something is broken. They would tell their maintainers. The maintainers would then go ahead and order the part. In my supply response section, there's a printer, and it would print out the 1348, which is our Department of Defense form for us to issue parts. And periodically, usually every 10, 15 minutes, or if they heard the printer going off, they would take whatever printed on that and then bring it into the warehouse and give it to the material handlers. They would then take it, go to the location because as a part of the 1348, it would have location information on there. And if it didn't, then they would go and look it up in our ERP system that John had talked about earlier. And they would go to the location, they would pick the part, count how many are remaining, depending on the type of material, mark that on there, because it's all about, you know, every time you touch something, you might as well go ahead and count it. So they would go ahead and count it, say, okay, there was 10 here, I'm taking one, there's 9 remaining. So then they would take it back, and they would, if it's just going to the flight line, then usually it would be something along the lines of, they would put it in a staging area. And so if there's several different piece parts for several different aircraft, because we're servicing well over 200 aircraft in 22 different squadrons. So it could be any number of places that that piece part is going to go. So they put it where, you know, this particular customer has a part, they'd go, it'd be pre-staged there. And then we would have the material delivery unit would pick those parts up and take it to the flight line and deliver it to the supply folks. They would complete the paperwork, and the part would be issued to the maintainers, who could then affect the repair. Alternatively, you were talking about shipping. So there are some cases for us, we would get requests for some of our material that we predominantly use for our flight line, but somebody else needed it because they ran out. We would get these orders, and they're called referrals. That requisition would get referred from a local warehouse that could have supplied it, but for whatever reason, they didn't have it. It would come to us. And then instead of the material handlers delivering it over here for the material delivery unit to pick up, they'll take it down to shipping, well, packing and shipping, who would then look at the material, look it up in the P700, which is a publication that tells us how do we handle specific packaging requirements on specific pieces of equipment. And if it doesn't have a very specific way to be packaged, then it would get packaged in, you know, bubble wrap and whatnot, and put into a box, given to the transportation folks, who would then go into the system of systems and put in a bunch of information in there, print out based on the weight of the thing, would depend on who's going to pick it up. But let's just call it 150 pounds or less, would go through a normal commercial carrier like FedEx or UPS. They would put that packaging stuff, the shipping labels on it, the 1348s and all the other shipping documents in it, and then give it to back to the packaging folks. And it would set out on a couple of different places, basically waiting, like just a material delivery unit. They would come and pick up the material, and they'd know where to take it. Well, we would have a specific area for FedEx, and we have a specific area for UPS. And then when they were there on their, you know, twice a day runs to pick stuff up from us, they would grab it, and they would electronically scan that they had received all that material. And we'd ask them to go ahead and sign a manifest, but usually they wouldn't be able to sign it all the time. And then off they would go with the material. And then that would be where it would transition out and then go make it to whoever the referral came from.
Deputy Division Director Jason Harnish and Division Director John Ballou of the Naval Supply Systems Command speaking with Federal News Network's Tom Temin. To hear this interview again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Federal Insights. I'm Eric White.
Thank you for listening to the discussion, The Modernized Warehouse, sponsored by Zebra Technologies on Federal News Network.